I wanted to welcome everyone here on behalf of Network 1274. Angie Proctor joined us from Texas. I want to tell you a real quick story. It was about, I guess, a year and a few months ago. I was at the TBRI practitioner training in February of 18. And that's when I met Angie. And I believe my first sentence was to her was, "I think it's your fault I'm here." Well, the story goes back 2001. My wife was an Agnes for Christ at Texas A&M University, and she was traveling around to different children's homes. And while she was at Bowles Home, which is where Angie and her husband were at the time, she had had her eardrum rupture, and she was there, and she ended up passing through, I believe, their cottage, and was able to interact with Angie and her husband. And just from that experience, my wife fell in love with working in children's homes. And then I met her, and then my wife convinced me to also join this career path. So really, it's because of Angie that I'm here. And it's just amazing. But the work that she does with the trust-based counseling services in Texas and what she'll be able to share is just going to be a blessing to us. So thank you so much for coming, Angie.
Thank you, Ben. Yeah, that was a very surreal moment when he kind of tagged me on the shoulder and told me this story. It was awesome. It had been so long. I mean, that was our first year there. Richard and I had just moved to Quinlan, Texas in 2001. So that was in our early years at Bowles Home. And now it is Arms of Hope, Bowles Campus. Medina and Bowles Home have come together as one. So my husband still works there, by the way. He is over the facilities, and we still live on campus, which is such a blessing. So it's been almost 7 years since I have moved on and done other things, but I'm still blessed by that ministry, and I like being involved and staying in touch with the kiddos there, because that is where my true love is. And I want to say that I love that I'm here today, because you guys, it's like coming home. I hope that you feel like I kind of get you. I worked at Bowles for almost 10 years and started at the bottom and left. You know, I worked as a clinical director as well as a residential care director before I moved on to follow my dream of finishing my PhD. So I love the work. I think it has made me who I am today. So I want to thank you guys for what you do, because I know that you're not in it for the money or the fame and glory. Well, glory one day, when we're all together, with our Heavenly Father, of course. But, I know you're in this because you love children. You have a passion for kids. So, I've already talked about myself, and Ben has too, so that's not important. But what I want to talk to you today is about trust-based relational intervention. Several of you have told me that you're familiar with this. Are there people that have either never heard of TBRI, or this is the first time that you have been trained on trust-based relational intervention? Okay. A few of you. Okay. So sounds like many of you are familiar, so I may kind of run through more quicker the introductory information and jump in to the details, because there are many details. And I was telling Sarah just a few minutes ago that I feel overwhelmed, because I want to give you enough information that is helpful to you, enough for hopefully for you to go, I want to know more, but not too much that completely overwhelms you. And I will say, Ben, you know, when you go to TBRI trainings, you feel like you're drinking from a fire hydrant, because there's so much information. So hopefully this will be good for you today. So our dear, wonderful Dr. Karen Purvis, who passed 3 years ago this week, who created TBRI, this is one of the phrases that she would say: it's you and me, kiddo, against your history. And I always tear up when I think about this, because it's you and me against your behavior, right? And so a lot of us are dealing with these really challenging behaviors and trying to figure out how we handle these. But when you get down to the heart of the matter, it's us against their history, what they've been through, the things that are affecting how they react and how they relate and how they behave. So I love this quote, because it brings me back and reminds me, as frustrated as I get with the children that I'm working with, my own personal biological children, all of those things, I have to remember it's me and them together. We're working together on this. We can get through this together. And I loved the devotional thought this morning. That's exactly what he was talking about this morning. Jesus decided to choose mercy. He decided to choose compassion. And I think that's what we should do. Choose compassion when we're working, not with just kids, but with each other. This is about being a human being, not just, oh, we use TBRI with tough kids. I don't believe that. I believe this is really how we should relate to each other. So this is Dr. Purvis, another one of our wonderful quotes. When you connect to the heart of a child, everything is possible. So trust-based relational intervention. If you're able to help a child to feel safe and build trusting relationships, anything is possible. I know, and you, I'm sure you guys have lots of success stories of kiddos that you've worked with over the years. And if you think about those kids and the resilience that they had, think about maybe the relationships they were able to make. These aren't the kids that didn't trust that you could figure out, you know, how to handle their behaviors or meet their needs. The kids that tend to be resilient are the ones that are able to build those relationships and find the people, the resources that they need to be successful in life. So anything is possible. So what is TBRI? It's holistic. Okay, so it's not just, okay, I'm going to help them with their emotional issues, or I'm going to help them with their physical issues or their educational issues. It's very holistic. It helps the whole child. It's evidence-based, and it's also something that is respectful of their developmental trajectory. So what we know is a lot of kids, when kids go through trauma, they lack the development of their emotional abilities. And so what TBRI helps us to learn is to go back and bring them back to wherever it was, even if it's at infancy, and you bring them back up. So it respects their developmental trajectory. So why should, what's so important about TBRI? Well, it's founded in research. So the Institute was founded in 2005. So in 2015, we celebrated 10 years and we're in 2019. So we're coming up on 20 years pretty soon, 15, 20 years. So, they have continued, to, conduct research. They are in the California evidence-based registry, as an evidence-based practice. So I would like to show you one of their newest animates. The Institute has three right now, and you can find these on YouTube. This one is about toxic stress. So I think this goes right along with asking the question, or answering the question, why should we use TBRI? Let's see here. Make sure we have...
As we develop, our brain produces 250,000 neurons every minute. By birth, we'll have 100 billion of these miraculous building blocks. But in order for our brains to fully function, we'll need synaptic connections to organize and build networks. Who we become and how we function depends entirely on how these networks develop, and our interactions with others and how we've been treated determines everything. From functions like heart rate, breathing, and basic emotions, to personality, decision-making, language, social behavior, and voluntary movement. We know that severe or prolonged abuse or neglect derails that building process. Even in the womb, distress and high anxiety in the mother allows cortisol, the stress hormone, to cross the placenta and disrupt development. When the toxic stress response is activated repeatedly, brain development and even immune systems are disrupted. Research has shown that high doses of stress hormones inhibit brain function and impulse control, overbuilding the fear center in the part of the brain that's critical to emotional regulation. TBRI uses three sets of principles to begin the healing caused by toxic stress. By recreating the developmental process, TBRI strives to introduce the nurturing that was absent in those toxic situations. And for the child who has endured toxic stress, healing must begin with a sense of both physical and emotional safety, something this child may have never known. Connecting principles are designed to create and nurture healthy relationships through sensitivity, consistency, and availability to disarm fear and gain trust. Giving full attention using a gentle voice and kind facial expressions and body language are just a few of the ways to help build trust. Punitive and controlling responses only feed a child's mistrust and fear. designed to meet physical needs, including sensory regulation, nutrition, and hydration, and strive to be aware of environmental issues, such as overstimulation by light, noise, or smells that can trigger behaviors that often leave caretakers baffled. The goal of the correcting principles is to help guide a child through day-to-day strategies by correcting fear-based behaviors and establishing felt safety, helping a child regulate their emotions, tell their stories, and learn through playful engagement. The Adverse Childhood Experiences study examined the effects of multiple types of abuse in childhood, and the staggering results showed that high doses of childhood adversity affect brain development drastically, leading to addictions, attempts at self-medication, impacted immune systems, chronic inflammation, and autoimmune diseases. The greater the number of traumatic events, the greater the damage. TBRI can help stop this ugly cycle. There is hope for the damaging effects of toxic stress, but it will take dedication, education, and most of all, understanding.
So I know that this toxic stress stuff is not news to you. You guys are dealing with clients, whether it's children or single moms, or there may be other programs, pregnant moms, young moms. You know, they're all dealing with this toxic stress. But what we found is by building nurturing, safe relationships, there's hope. We can help them to heal and move forward and not... their toxic stress that they are dealing with doesn't affect them like this ACEs study. The Animate mentioned the ACEs. Are you guys familiar with the ACEs study? Okay, good. Most of you are. So over 17,000 people were surveyed. Kaiser Permanente in California, the insurance company, partnered with Filetti. He was the head researcher for this project. And they just gave out this 10 question survey to people. And these were adults. These were not children. And they found that there was a very close correlation with their physical health and their emotional health. So I know this is kind of hard to see, but basically this graphic, and you can find this on their website, ACEs Too High is the website, and there are lots of really good new graphics that I have not downloaded yet, but this is one of them, and it shows, this is your ACEs score. So what happens if you guys have never taken it? You answer all 10 questions, and it's just yes or no. And so if you answer yes, you get a point. So at the end of the 10 questions, you add up how many yeses you have, and that's your ACEs score. So if a person has an ACEs score of 2, then you notice that you have these little, this is a graphic of showing the dots, and there's all kinds of physical and emotional issues such as cancer, depression, suicidal thoughts, diabetes, those sorts of things. So the lower the number, here's an ACEs score of 1, these little dots are small. As they grow to 2, if you've got a 2 ACEs score, it gets bigger. So if you jump up to 4, see how this is the higher the probability that you're going to have certain issues. And if you look at it in this way, in life expectancy, the more ACEs you have, the more likely you could be to be deceased at an earlier age. So we are talking, if we can work with our clients in a way that they can be resilient of their toxic stress and their trauma, we can be changing their life expectancy. Okay? This is big stuff. And I know of children now that I worked with at Bowles Children's Home that are now in their 30s. And because of what they've been through, they're already diabetic. They already have emotional issues. But because of some of the work that we've done, they have a family, they have a job, they're able to keep, pay their bills and that sort of thing. So being able to give that gift to the people that you're working with is immense. Because I also know people, families who have adopted and fostered children, that their children did not make it. They went into drugs. They, because of their health issues, they may have passed away. I have a very, very dear close friend that's another practitioner and a mentor that actually still works at Bowles Home. He adopted a sibling. He and his wife adopted a sibling group, and their middle son was diabetic before you know, they came to them. He had type 1. But because of his trauma and his emotional issues, he decided he couldn't handle being around the environment that he was in. So he ended up paving his own way. And unfortunately, he didn't take care of his diabetes and he passed away. So I do know people that have lost their children. And so we have to be, very thoughtful of how we are providing and, providing care for our clients. Okay. So the three main principles of TBRI is the connecting principles, the empowering principles, and the correcting principles. We're going to do empowering first. The handout that you have on your table is for the next session in connecting, but feel free to write on the back if you need to take notes on something. But we will go through all three of these, and I hope that I have plenty of time to go through every one of them. There's so much to tell you. So there are two pieces to the empowering principles, and this is about how do we provide an environment for our clients to thrive. What do we need to do? Do we need to change the scenery? Do we also need to be mindful of their biology and meet their needs there? So let's talk about the physiological strategies first. Our clients are often fear-based. They are hardwired for fear because of the things that they've experienced in the past. So they often think things are a danger that may really not be a danger, because they are hypervigilant and they're often triggered very easily. So felt safety is very important for us to be aware of. So being safe and feeling safe are two different things. So right now, I would assume that you guys feel fairly safe. We've got a nice roof above our head. We're in a beautiful hotel. A little chilly, but that's okay. But you know, we're kind of calm. You guys look pretty relaxed and calm. You're away from the stress of your work, and you're able to get away. But if you were to hear a gunshot in that other room, you wouldn't feel so safe, right? You would try to figure out what's going on. You guys may even get up and run out of the room. Wouldn't matter if I was still talking. You're going to take care of your needs, right? Okay. So feeling safe and knowing that you are okay is different from you actually being safe. And so maybe that gunshot was a video that they were showing in the next room. So it really wasn't an actual, somebody has a gun in the room trying to kill us, but it was just a sound. So really we are safe, but we didn't know it. So our bodies react to those things. All of us do that. And so Dr. Dan Siegel, I don't know if you're familiar with Dan Siegel, but he wrote The Whole Brain Child. He wrote an excellent book called Brainstorm for those of you that work with teenagers. They have another book called No Drama Discipline, Yes Brain. He and Tina Payne Bryson have co-authored a lot of really good books. But they talk about the brain and how we have an upstairs brain and a downstairs brain. And if you were to hold your hand up in a fist like this, with your thumb tucked under, this is a really good way to teach your kids or your adults that you're working with about how our brain develops and how it works. So right here, you've got your brain stem, and that's our reptilian brain. That's the piece of our brain that is developed first. And those clients that we work with that have been through lots of trauma, their brain stem develops much more quickly than the rest of our brain. So they are in survival mode a lot. They are triggered a lot because this is more developed than everything else. So then you've got on the inside, this is your midbrain. This is where your hypothalamus and your amygdala, where your big feelings, we talk about big feelings, they reside here. And so when a child or an adult is really sad or anxious, that's where all of that is housed. Then you've got the prefrontal cortex. That is the area that's developed last. In fact, in our 20s, we're still developing our prefrontal cortex. But that's where we think in processes. We are able to make decisions. We think in sequences. So we can think, okay, if I say something offensive to my friend, they might be really upset with me. In fact, they might punch me in the face over it. Okay? Thinking through problem solving, and if I do this, this will happen. A lot of our kids don't have that. They just do it, and then they're wondering why somebody got upset or why they got in trouble, because they're not thinking. That's not developed very well. This is really developed. And so when you as an adult come up to them and say, why did you do that? Well, then they're triggered by their trauma. So they're not able to say, or if you say, you know better, you're 16 years old, you should be able to not, you should know that you shouldn't say those things to people. Well, another thing to think of is a lot of our kids that have been through lots of trauma, they're about half of their chronological age emotionally. So if you're talking about a 16-year-old chronologically or biologically, they're probably about 8. And so when you say, you're acting like an 8-year-old, well, they really are developmentally. So thinking of all those things, very important. We've kind of talked about the executive state, the emotional state, and the survival state. I love the questions, though. For the prefrontal cortex, the question is, what can I learn from this? So you're able to process, okay, this is going on, so let me put this all together and process this. And that's what our kids often are missing. In the emotional state, okay, how do I feel? Am I loved? Am I liked? That's your big feelings, how you feel about who you are and how people look at you. And then their survival state is, am I going to survive today? That's all I care about. Am I safe? So if you think about the challenges that you're having with your children, think about those different questions. And I bet a lot of them are in that survival state. This is another really good graphic. I added it. I know it's really kind of the same as that upstairs, downstairs brain graphic. But I love the visual. Kind of makes me think of how the brain develops and how intricate it is and what how God has designed it. But just some of the things that I haven't mentioned yet. So your upstairs brain, when you're in the upstairs brain, which is your prefrontal cortex, and you're able to access that, you're able to organize. You're able to attend to information, pay attention and focus. You're able to plan, because planning means you've got to problem solve and think, okay, if we leave at this time, then that should give us plenty of time to get to where we're supposed to be when we're supposed to be there. So if our kids don't have that, then they're not, you're going to help them with that planning. Regulate. So emotional regulation. When I'm really upset, I'm able to calm myself down. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the connecting section. I'm going to talk about the attachment cycle and how that works. Reasoning, thinking, learning, decision-making. Versus the downstairs brain, you have an arousal state. You're triggered by things. You're hypervigilant. Any sounds, smells, noises, things that you see could trigger you when they really may not be that scary. I had a situation where I work at Texas A&M University in Commerce, Texas, and a lady that works for me shared with me that she had really, really had a traumatic life, been through a lot of abuse, and so she would share with me when she would get triggered in the office. And we work in an office. It's not like we're out in a, you know, scary environment. But she would come in and talk to me about my pulse is racing. I can't think. And so I would talk. Thank goodness I know all this stuff. And so I would talk to her and calm her. And so now we've known each other for almost 6 years. She'll come to me and she'll say, you know what, Angie? I didn't get triggered on the anniversary of the date that I divorced my husband, who brutally beat her. I mean, she was able to realize that some of those things she's not even cognizant of, but she's triggered just because her body keeps the score. Have you ever heard of Bessel van der Kolk? Amazing guy, wrote a book called The Body Keeps the Score and talks about how we aren't even cognizant or conscious of the things that our body remembers. Arousal state, danger, fear, fight, flight, and freeze. So I love this picture just because it shows you, how trauma can affect our brains. So you see the normal size brain of a child that has neurotypical development, and then you have a child's brain that has been through extreme neglect, and how that can affect their development. Very powerful. So here's some things that you can do to help your kiddos. As far as we're talking about empowering, so these are some things that you can do. Be predictable. How many times have you guys been gifted baseball tickets or like Six Flags tickets and things like that? And so that's wonderful, right? Everybody should be really excited about that. Well, and the kids are excited about that. But your schedule changes, right? You know, you may go on a Saturday or a holiday. And so whereas you typically, you know, you get up at this time, you have lunch at this time, and these are your activities for the day, and it's something that kids are used to, even though it's something really fun, it's a change. And so have you ever experienced going, and this is so exciting, and everybody's excited, and you get there, and you've got kids just totally melting down because they can't handle it? Because it's something different, and they don't know what to expect, and they're overwhelmed. I mean, think about it. All the people, all the sounds, all the new stuff, even though they're excited about it. Now, they may actually, it may be a scary thing for them. It may be a trigger because they're worried about that. But even kids that are excited about new stuff, sometimes we have to say, okay, so this is what we're going to do today. You may even have to give them a picture, like, okay, this is what it's going to look like, or a graph. I know in the state of Texas, licensing requires you to have a schedule posted in your cottages. I don't know about other states. But maybe you come up with a schedule and you say, okay, at this time, this is what we're going to do. And then we're going to drive and then we're going to have lunch at this time. They may be triggered just because they don't know when they're going to eat next. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could be triggering them. So predictability is super important. Another thing to consider is transitions. So moving from one thing to another. So in the evening, you may have dinner time and you may have homework time, or, you know, different things that you move the kids to and from. Give them transition time. Don't just say, okay, we're doing this right now. Well, if we're talking, they don't have executive functioning abilities, right? They're not able to process that. Definitely not able to process it at the rate that you and I may be able to do. My son, my biological son, is kind of a slow processor. So if I'm trying to talk to him and tell him, okay, I need you to do this, 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 and this, he gives me this blank stare. And that kind of looks disrespectful. I'm looking for, okay, mommy, I'm going to do that. But he's still thinking through that. It takes him. And so watch for those things when you're trying. And actually, I love to talk. I love to talk. I have to remind myself, if I use too many words, it's too much for them to process. So try to be very clear and concise and limit the amount of words that you're using. And you might even say, okay, buddy, it's your night to do a certain chore. Let's say maybe clean off the table after dinner. So do you remember what it is that we do? Okay, first you take a rag and you wipe off the table. Then you need to sweep underneath the table, whatever it is. But just make sure that it's not too much. And again, you might have a chart where they actually have to look at pictures, because sometimes it's hard for them to even read and process all of that. And it's real frustrating. It's very frustrating, because we should be able to go, okay, do this and you're good, you know? But our kiddos don't have that capacity, at least in the beginning. You will see that if you work with them, they might be able to build on that, depending on how long they're with you. Okay, so predictability and transitions are really important. And an example for the transitions are, if you're going to do something, like say you're going to do an activity in a few minutes, say, okay, in 5 more minutes, we're going to stop what we're doing here and we're going to go to this activity. And then don't just leave them, because they'll forget. So go back in a couple more minutes and say, all right, 3 more minutes, we're going to move on. Okay, fair enough. Or, you know, get their eyes to make sure that they are processing with you, because they'll go, okay, fine, whatever. Well, they're not really listening. Okay, so make sure that you get their eye contact and say, hey, did you hear me, sweetie? You got your eyes? You understand? What are we going to do? You might even have them repeat that, okay? All right, so let's talk about sensory issues. A lot of our kids, and really, this isn't necessarily trauma kids. I didn't really talk about the risk factors. Let me tell you about the risk factors really quick. So there are several different risk factors that can impede development. So you've got a traumatic pregnancy. So if the mom is going through stress, or they're sick, or having, you know, issues with the pregnancy, that can cause developmental delay. So we're talking you and me. I mean, when I had my daughter, she was losing oxygen, and they were thinking they were going to have a C-section. So there was a little bit of trauma going on in there. And so that could affect her. And guess what? She had some sensory issues. And so not just these kiddos that are coming from really tough situations, all of us could have some of these sensory issues. So it's really good to know what they are and maybe know some things that you can do to help. So the senses are to help our body be alert, because our senses, we take in information from the environment, and then that helps us to know how to react. So earlier we had talked about, you know, if we heard a gunshot. So if we hear a gunshot, we're taking that information in, and then our body sends out messages throughout the extremities to determine what we're going to do about that. Okay? So it's to protect our body, to select what we're going to attend to. Again, if you hear a gunshot, you're not going to pay attention to me. You're going to be paying attention to what it is that you got to figure out to be safe. And then also to organize information. Organize your brain, okay? Some of the things that you can do is, if you notice there are meltdowns or behavior things, a kid's constantly breaking something, or a kid's constantly pushing people, make a little diary. Put down what time of day that's happening, or maybe what activity is going on, and what exactly is happening, and that can kind of help you. Be a detective. You kind of have to be a detective to figure out, oh, so every time she switches classes to this one teacher, we're having issues. Well, let's look at the classroom. Is it really loud? Is the light, the fluorescent lighting, bothering this person? Is there a kiddo in that class that's bullying this child? So it can help you to kind of go down, okay, let's figure out what's happening. So making a journal to figure out what's going on is really helpful. Okay, so senses. What are the senses that you guys think of? There's, what, five senses that we think of automatically?
Sight, smell.
Touch. Okay. Do we say hearing, auditory? Yeah. Okay. So those are the ones, those are your external senses that we all kind of know about. We have some internal senses that are not as obvious to see, like in people. So like, if somebody's blind, you usually can see that they have a cane, or you can kind of tell. I guess maybe if they're deaf, you don't always know until you start talking to them. But the external are a little bit more obvious to people. The internal, we don't know. So there's a couple of big ones. The vestibular sense. That is kind of the powerhouse sense. All of these senses have receptor sites, and the receptor site for the vestibular sense is your inner ear. So has anybody ever had vertigo? Maybe your eardrum has busted, or something has happened where your equilibrium is off. Well, how do you feel? You're dizzy. You might be sick at your stomach. You might fall down. You're clumsy, right? Because you don't, it has to do with your inner ear liquid, right? So something I learned about this through TBRI is our vestibular sense is developed when we're little, and our inner ear liquid is thick when we're born. So when we are picked up, when we're jostled around, think about holding a baby. You do this, and then you rock, right? Or you're in a rocking chair, rocking back and forth. All of that motion is moving that inner ear liquid around. And so as you get older and the more activity happens, that inner ear liquid thins out. And as they get old enough to toddle around and start walking, you know, at first they're just like, whoo, you know, they don't have a lot of balance. Some of that is about muscle, but some of it is about that literal balance in that inner ear. So as they get old enough, that vestibular sense is developed. Think about your kiddos that have sat in the crib for hours and hours that were not picked up. They had the little flat heads that were not held by their mamas or by a caregiver. So they have not developed that. So you may have a child that's 6, 7, 11, 12 that is just clumsy. because he just doesn't really, that doesn't mean he, you know, is completely dizzy. I mean, some of them might be, but they just haven't developed that sense very well. And that can cause problems, because if they're in the cafeteria line and they're hitting and bumping everybody, well, the person behind them or in front of them might think that they're just trying to push them. So thinking of those things, those needs that they have. There is also a sense called proprioception. That is your deep muscle pressure. And the receptor side is just your muscles. So I always use, and my son just started track this year, and so he was learning to do hurdles. I could never, ever do that. But his body, the first time that he did a track meet, he did okay a couple of times, but he fell. He hit one of the hurdles. It's because his body is learning how to use that deep muscle pressure in his legs to jump over that hurdle without hitting it or without falling. And so if we don't have that sense, you're going to see kids that are coloring, that break their pencils or their crayons. Kids that, if you give them a high five, they may like knock you into next week because they really don't know how to modulate, their pressure. They might be coming up to a friend of theirs and, you know, just trying to go, "Hey buddy," and slapping them on the shoulder, and then they knock them over because they really don't realize how much force they're using. So that's your proprioceptive sense. And there's lots of things. I mean, just exercises. A simple exercise is saying, "Okay, let's practice this. Give me a high five, but make it like really, really soft." You know, you can even show them ahead of time. And so you do that with them. "Oh, great job. Okay, let's do it a little bit like middle, like just a little bit more force, you know, kind of regular. And give it to me hard." Bam! Of course, you know, that's real easy for them. But you're giving them a way to practice, helping them to be successful. And that's another big important part of TBRI, which we'll talk about in the correcting section. I'm going to watch my time. I've got till 10:30 or 10:45. Okay. So we'll talk a little bit more about learning through action. That's a big piece of the correcting, because you're giving them the opportunity to be successful and you're being proactive. So you're not waiting on them to mess up, okay, and saying, "You did that wrong, let's do that again." In the times that either you're just hanging out, maybe group therapy, you know, whatever, you're giving them opportunities to practice these social emotional learning, okay, to practice how do we handle ourselves with each other. Let's practice how to give high fives and modulate. Okay. Let's practice how to, and we'll get into the engine plates here in a minute and we'll talk about that emotional regulation. And then your tactile sense is one of the first senses that are, developed. It's developed inside the womb. And so you can imagine that touch is very important, very sensitive. And some of our kids have experienced negative touch. So making sure that you are asking permission, to touch. You know, we might do a lot of fist bumps, a lot of high fives, just kind of shoulder, you know, pats, rather than getting in there and giving a hug. I know you guys really already know that. But that tactile sense is very sensitive and very important. Okay, some examples of some things, that you can do to empower your kids is to remember they need sustenance on a regular basis. And I get so frustrated with the schools because our little guys go to school, 7:30, 7 o'clock, and then they don't have lunch until maybe 11:30, sometimes 12, depending on your campus and how many people are using the lunchroom. So going that long is really hard on us. I mean, think about, you know, we start getting hungry if we get up and have a snack, you know, a breakfast 6 or 7 o'clock, 12 o'clock, we're ready. We're ready to have something to eat. So, it's really important for, our kids to, on a regular basis, have something. And I know that a lot of schools will, let children have snacks in the nursing, in the nurse's office. some of the classrooms now are letting them have them maybe in a cubby, in their classroom. It just depends on the school district and how willing they are to do that, because, you know, once you give one to one kid, everybody needs it. So I think sometimes teachers will just incorporate it a snack time if they can afford it and provide it. So snacks are very important. Every 2 hours would be great. Protein packed, so not a lot of high sugar, but things like cheese or a protein like meat or jerky or nuts or fruit, all of those things that actually provide nutrients so that their brains can have what they need to learn. Because we're giving them a lot to do during the day, and they need as much as they can. Water is super important. When you think that you're thirsty, like when you have the thought, I'm kind of thirsty, you've already lost 10% of your cognitive functioning. 10%. Okay? None of us drink enough. I know I don't. And so, we get pretty grumpy. We can't organize our thinking. We can't process. And so making sure that they have the ability, and a lot of schools are allowing, kids to have water bottles now so they can just get up and go get their water. If not that, let them have a water break. Let them go to the water fountain if they need to. So that's very important. Physical play. Our kids don't do that enough these days. We have a lot of electronics, a lot of video games that encourage them to be sedentary. We also, in the classroom, encourage them to sit still for hours and hours on end, and we've taken recess almost completely away. We expect them to sit still all the time and be quiet all the time. It takes a lot for them to do that. So we really need to be mindful of that. We need to think of, okay, if you got a kiddo that's squirming, maybe they need to get up and have a little bit of a brain break. There's all kinds of things. There's Go Noodle, that teachers use in the classroom. That might be something that, depending on your cottages and what your, you know, populations are, they might have something where they pull up on the computer screen and have some physical activities done. But you guys probably have access to, basketball courts or, you know, whatever you have on your campuses. So really encourage that. They really need to be out moving and doing, because that's the way our brains reorganize themselves. I mean, think about it. If you had to sit and listen to me from when we started, 9:45, all the way to, I think I'm done at 2:45 or something, without a break, without getting up, you wouldn't be paying attention to me. I mean, I would lose you. So you guys need a break too. You need to get up every so often, get something to drink, move around, stretch, do something, because our brains just get numbed out if we're just sitting, even if you got really good information that's coming to you. You've got to be able to move around. It's really important. If you've got a kid that is resistant to sound, you can have headphones. You can have, you can maybe just think about, I say chaos, but you know, think about the noise level of where they are. Like say in a cottage, if somebody is saying, and I don't know, do you guys still call them cottages? if you've got somebody that's really struggling, one of the first things I would say is, you know, what's the noise level? What's going on? Is there a lot of chaos? Because that child may be just overwhelmed. And so being able to give them an opportunity to either, you can either give them headphones, or you can have a calming corner. I have a video of what's called a peace corner. If we have time, I will show it to you. I just want to make sure we have time to get all the information in. But you can have a place where they can just kind of go sit and be calm. You can use a tent. You can use just a chair. Have some weighted blankets. Have some fidgets. You know, I've got little stress balls up here. whatever, you know, they might be able to put on some earphones and listen to some calming music. Just providing that ability to regulate and to calm. Fidgets are really important. There's all kinds. You can find fidgets like on OT websites or autistic, you know, therapy websites, but anything from stress balls to like those little water beads, I think they're called Orbeez, sandbox, you know, like bean pools. There's things you can put on pencils that they can move around, you know, all kinds of things. just remember, and I know teachers, it drives them crazy because kids bring all these cool things to the classroom. And, oh, this is therapeutic. This is my sensory thing. Woohoo! Well, if they don't, if they become a toy, then we have to provide structure around that. So they have to know this is not a toy. This is something to help you calm and to help you to regulate your thoughts and to be able to focus. If it becomes a toy, it'll need to go back, you know, in a box or, you know, wherever. Because that, if it becomes distracting to other people, they need to understand that it's not, oh, I'm just going to do whatever I want to. And of course, then everybody else wants to do it. They need to understand that that is a tool to help them calm. And the kids around them, whether it's in a cottage or in a classroom, they need to know that that's a special tool. It's not just something to play and throw and distract people with. bean bags, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can use. To help empower the children and provide a different environment to help them to calm. Okay, so there's lots of other things. Let me show you the engine plate first. This is something really simple that you can do. Just take a plate. This is like a Chinant plate, but you can use the real cheapies if you want to. But color it, three different colors. This comes from the Alert program. You can look that up. TCU uses this, and a lot of people think that they created this, but they didn't. But they took it from the Alert program, which is kind of like a play therapy model. So what we do is we compare our emotions to an engine in a car. And so if we're on red, it's almost like that you've got your pedal on the gas, and it's all revved up. Then if you're on blue, it's kind of like it's just, you know what, kind of putting along, put, right? And it needs a little bit more gas. And then the green is just right. You're just zooming right along just fine. And so this is a great time if you have maybe a therapist, at your campus, or even the, you know, the social workers, or if the house parents are comfortable doing this, you can kind of have a group and everybody makes their plate and you explain what all this is about. And if your engine is on red, what does that mean? That means that I might be mad, or I might be really anxious, or actually I might be really excited, like it's my birthday and I know we're going to have a birthday party and I can't wait. But their behavior might be just like off the charts because they're so excited. So they can say, okay, I'm on red. So then you can say, okay, so you're really kind of revved up. Your engine looks like it's on red. So how can we get it back on green? So that's when you teach them different exercises. So this engine has three ways. So this says three things that help me calm. So if they're on red, these are three things. So breathing, we all know that breathing is really helpful. Yoga. I've got something called a pillow sandwich. So you can take the cushions from a pillow, from a couch. And if the child trusts you, because this is really, you got to be careful, but you can have them lay down on the floor on the cushions, lay them on the cushions, and then take the rest of the cushions and put them on top. So it's like the cushions are the bread. And then you can ask them real playfully, so what kind of sandwich do you want? Oh, I want a ham and cheese. Okay, so we'll put the ham and cheese on there. And then do you want mayonnaise or mustard? Oh, I want mustard. Okay, let's slather that on. So see, that's touch. You're able to give them some nurturing touch, but it's through play. And play disarms fear, okay? Being playful is will help them to feel safe. Remember, we talked about the felt safety rather than actually knowing that you are safe. And then you say, oh, you want pickles or onions or tomatoes or, you know, lettuce, all that stuff. And then you put the cushions on top for the bread. And then you just very softly give them pressure. And you might even ask them, do you need more pressure? Do you need me to squish the sandwich a little bit more? Because some kids love it. And that's proprioceptive sensory integration. So that deep muscle pressure. And they'll tell you, and then they go, oh no, that's good, that's good. And if he goes, I don't want this, well, absolutely, you take it all off. Okay, buddy, we'll just do something else. So that's another activity you can do. And having a glass of water. This one happens to have the breathing, the pillow sandwich, and water, because water can be very calming. And so then, if they are in the blue, then you can say, you know what? You look like you need to kind of have some energy. What do you think would help? And so I love that we have the peppermints. Peppermint is actually alerting, and it's also very calming. And sucking on a hard candy can be very calming, okay? That's proprioceptive. And crunching can help you to organize your thoughts. Gum, Dr. Purvis would say, I'm the queen of bubble gum. And she would let kids have as many pieces as they wanted at one time. Like they might have 6 or 7 pieces in there. Because chewing releases serotonin. And it's very calming. And so it's hard for them to have meltdowns if they're trying to focus and chew. And of course they love having the sugar. So I know it's not as healthy. But you can have other things that maybe would be more healthy for you. But chewing is very helpful. Sucking, a lot of times, kids, have you ever noticed kids, chewing on their clothes? So something that you could do, there's a lot of chew toys. Again, you can look, on Pinterest or on, the OT websites. And there's also a website called jewelry.com, like jewelry.com. And they have little necklaces that have, things that, you know, kids can chew on that's not bad for them. Cause, you know, straws, it's really not very good for your teeth. If you chew on ice a whole lot, that's really not good for your teeth either. But that's the thing though. If you've got a kid that's constantly going to the ice machine and crunching on ice, you can go, they have a thing. That's like a sensory thing. So maybe there's something I can do to help with that. So just be a detective and look for those, pieces of evidence that they are trying to meet their need on their own. They're not thinking that. They're not thinking, I have a sensory issue. They're doing the things that are helping their bodies calm naturally. Okay? So the engine plates can be a whole activity, and can be part of something called a nurture group. And man, would I love to have time to do that, but I don't know that we have time to do that. but basically you get together and you talk about your engines. And you can do an engine check. Hey, how's everybody's engine today? What are you on? Let's do an activity. Teach them activities all the time about how to calm themselves or how to make themselves more alert and get themselves on green. There's another activity that goes along the nurture group. That's the Band-Aid activity. Everybody gets a Band-Aid and they pair up. And the partners take turns putting a Band-Aid on each other. And so it's kind of a ritual, and they say, do you have a hurt today? And then the person says yes or no. Now, you're going, well, those kids are going to say, no, I don't have a hurt. But at first, what you can say is, that's okay. They can say, because you want to provide trust for them. You want to build trust with them. So if you're going, well, you better tell me you got a hurt. We're doing this activity, and we got to do it. Well, that's really not going to help, right? They're going to go, not doing it. So you can say, you know what? It's okay if you don't have a hurt. That's okay. You want the Band-Aid and they can keep it. There's actually a really good, I don't know if I have it. Let me see if I have the video. There's a really good video of Dr. Purvis, doing that, activity. I don't have it up here, but I may be able to find it during a break. She's doing that activity with, teenage girls. And there is a young lady that you can tell she's kind of the ringleader, like all the girls are looking to her to see what she's going to do. And Karen actually partners up with her, and she asks her, does she have a hurt? Does she want a Band-Aid? And she's like, no. She's like, okay, that's all right. You can do me then. So then the girl gives her the Band-Aid, and Karen is talks to her about having cancer and how that's her inside hurt. And how, you know, she's really having a hard time. And so the girl, when Karen looks away, the girl takes the Band-Aid that she was given and puts it in her shirt. And so the story that they tell about that is later that day, the girl went to a person, one of her caregivers that she did have trust with, that she knew very well, and did that ritual with that person. So giving them the opportunity and talking to them about, we all have outside hurts and inside hurts, and the figurative putting a Band-Aid on that and saying, I'm so sorry that you hurt. Giving them that eye contact and teaching them how to be compassionate with each other is really powerful. And what you'll find is in the beginning, they'll be very superficial. You know, they'll say, oh, I fell down and I hurt my knee. I've got this scratch on my knee. That's kind of easy to talk about. But if you continue to do these activities on a regular basis, you will find all of a sudden they're going to start saying, I really miss my mom. I really wish I lived with my mom. You know, things that are really more on the inside. And then the person they're partnered with can say, I know you do. I'm so sorry. That must really make you sad. And so then being able to have somebody to understand what's going on. And you don't have to fix it, but, you know, just being there for them. Yoga is really good. Oh, intentional dysregulation. Why in the world would I suggest that you do an activity that gets your kids dysregulated? Anybody have an idea? Yeah, to show them healthy ways to regulate, because we all get dysregulated, even healthy adults. There's things that kind of get us off of our rockers, right? Or things that we don't expect, or, oh my gosh, I'm trying to get this done and I can't get it done. So we get dysregulated and we have to learn how to calm ourselves. So if you can do activities that get them dysregulated, fun activities, and there, I mean, probably any physical activity that you might do with the kids is probably dysregulating. So you can get out there. There's a fun game where you stand in a circle with a hula hoop and you step through the hula hoop and it goes all the way around. And you time them so you can kind of put pressure on them. Okay, go faster, you know, and kind of get them. Well, you might start seeing people kind of melting down back there. And it's not that you're trying to be mean about it, cruel about it, but it's the ability to, for you to be able to observe. And then you can have hopefully some staff hanging around that when those things happen, they can be there for that child to help them calm. But then you can also kind of do it as a group. Like if you've got several kids that you can tell, oh, it looks like we're all on red. I think our engines are on red. So let's do some calming activities. Magic mustache. I don't know if y'all have ever heard the magic mustache. These are pressure points right here. This is a pressure point. This is a pressure point. And right here. Think about it. When you get stressed out, do you ever do this? I don't know if I ever do this. But we do that naturally, but we're putting pressure on these pressure points to help us to calm. So magic mustache is a way to say, okay, let's do magic mustache. And you just put pressure for about 10 seconds. And of course, then you're encouraging them to breathe. So those are things. Smell the soup, cool the soup. You've ever done that? So get your bowls of soup up. Everybody get their bowls of soup. All right. What's your favorite kind of soup? Throw it out.
Chicken
soup. That's pretty calming, especially on a cool day like today. So what we're going to do is we're going to hold our bowl of soup and then we're going to breathe. We're going to smell it. So we're going to breathe in and then we're going to cool it off. Let's do it again. Breathe in. Cool it off. One more time. Breathe in. Cool it off. Can you feel yourself every time you would get a little bit more relaxed and more relaxed? So those are fun ways, you know, because they'll say, if you say do your breathing, they'll go, no, you're going to hyperventilate if you do that. there's all kinds of fun activities that you can do to help your kids, calm. Sensory activities. There's a really good book, Carol Kranowitz. She is, I think she's an OT, if I can remember, but she wrote a book called The Out of Sync Child. And it kind of explains all the different sensory processing issues. And it has little check boxes that you can, kind of check off and say, oh, okay, I see this in this kiddo. She also wrote a book following that called The Out of Sync Child Has Fun, I believe is what it's called. And so you can take the information from the out of sync child and then look at the book, and the book will say, okay, so if you've got a kiddo that's really struggling with vestibular integration, here's some activities that you can do with that. And I mean, it's usually things like swinging and things, anything that has to do with balance, riding a bike, playing on like a balance beam, anything that has to do with, developing your balance. Now I went to Empower to Connect. Some of you guys were there. Wonderful woman, Marty Smith. She's an occupational therapist out of Austin. She has created a free sensory assessment. I'm trying to remember what her website was. But it is on her website and it's free, and you just go through and it's literally like a drop down. It asks questions And I think it's supposed to give you kind of an assessment of what, if you're taking it for a person or for yourself, it gives you some ideas of things that you can do to help with those sensory issues. Mindfulness. We're going to, Marti, M-A-R-T-I, Smith. We're going to talk about mindfulness more in the next section, but just to kind of preempt you with it, we are doing these things to help our children to be more mindful of who they are. They feel like something is wrong with them. They know they're different. They also feel like that nobody understands them, and they don't understand themselves either. And so when you as an adult can walk up and go, you know, I've noticed that when you color, sometimes those colors break. And I noticed that you're really putting a lot of pressure. So let's practice. Let's do something, you know, that can maybe help you to not break your colors. Not quit breaking your colors. Golly, can't you just do that right? Total difference, right? So when you walk up to a kid and notice something that they're struggling with and say, I can help. Let's figure this out together. It's a completely different thing. And you can also say, you know what? I get dysregulated sometimes too. You know what? This morning I was kind of stressed out because traffic was really bad when I was coming to work and I was afraid I was going to be here late. So my engine was in the red. So for them to know that we struggle with things too, helps them to know that they're not just this bad kid because they figure they're this bad kid because they're getting in trouble all the time. And sometimes they're told they're a bad kid. So just helping them to be mindful and knowing, oh, I'm not a bad kid. I just have the sensory thing I got to work on. Or I'm just hungry. I haven't eaten for 5 hours. I need a snack. Those sorts of things. It's very, very important. Okay, where are we? Okay, I think we're about ready to take a break. Just real quick, here are some, just for you to know, if you want to take a picture of it or something, but these are some ideas of different sensory activities that can help you. There's alerting activities, organizing activities, and calming. We've already talked about some of these, sucking on hard candy, rocking back and forth. I bet you've seen that before. If you see a kid that's rocking back and forth or this way, they're trying to calm themselves. It may look weird, especially if they're 18 years old, but they're trying to calm themselves. Crunchy snacks are alerting, taking a shower, jumping up and down. Have you ever had a kiddo that just would sit upside down all the time on the couch? My son did that all the time. That's them trying to organize their thoughts. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Oh, okay. Yes. So we have the website for Marti Smith. Okay. So it's Calmer with a K. K-A-L-M-E-R dot Creative Therapies all together .com. And you should be able to find that assessment there. All right, you guys have a little bit of a break. We will see you back in a few minutes.